From KCPW in Salt Lake City, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. This time of year, Park City is Mecca for independent filmmakers. The directors, the producers, as well as the actors make their annual pilgrimage to the Beehive State to be part of an event that celebrates the best of independent film. Yes, it's Sundance time, and the film festival that Robert Redford built continues to stand behind the idea that the big studios and Hollywood money shouldn't get in the way of a good story. So what movies are the favorites? Can you still get tickets? And of course, where should you park? Today on the program, we get an insider's guide to Sundance from the man who's been covering the festival for two decades, Sean Means from the Salt Lake Tribune. Plus, Sundance isn't the only film game in town. We'll have a conversation with the founder and director of Slam Dance, Peter Baxter. All that and your calls after the news. Good morning, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Opening weekend is over, and the Sundance Film Festival is in full swing. Now in its 28th year, Sundance remains true to Robert Redford's original vision of celebrating independence in filmmaking. And today on the program, we're getting the inside scoop on this year's festival with a man who's been covering it for 20 years, Sean Means. He's the movie critic and columnist for the Salt Lake Tribune. He writes the blog The Cricket, which reports on movie releases and entertainment here in Utah, and he joins us from the studios of KPCW in Park City. And Sean Means, thanks so much for your time today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Later on in the program, we turn to the festival which touts itself as by filmmakers for filmmakers. That's Slam Dance. But first, Sundance. What have you seen so far, and what films are you looking forward to? Give us your recommendations. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Sean Means, you've been doing this for 20 years. How has the festival changed in the time that you've been covering it?
Well, at heart, it's really not that different. I mean, it's the central idea of bringing in the best of films and of independent films and getting them out to an audience. I mean, that central notion has not changed. What has changed with the films is that they're better than they have been, in the sense that they are more technically proficient, with new digital technology and so on. It's a lot easier to do better work. And because there are so many films made every year and submitted to the festival every year, they really can pick from, the best of the best. Mm. Now the other thing that has changed is sort of the outside sort of shell that is the part that unfortunately more people talk about, which is the celebrity stuff and the corporate stuff and the gifting lounges and all the sort of Hollywood accoutrements that sort of grow up around here because when you've got a lot of movies and a lot of movie stars and a lot of media paying attention, this one, everybody wants to sort of get their time in front of the spotlight.
Sure, the party scene.
the party scene as well, yeah. Yeah.
You wrote about some of these memories in a recent column, meeting Harvey Weinstein, sitting behind Al Gore during a screening, watching the Blair Witch Project. I mean, it brought back a lot of memories for me of Sundance. But when I read the Blair Witch reference, I immediately thought, how many of those, films that are just out of nowhere, that are super, super low budget, are we seeing now? Or was that something that's kind of gone by the wayside?
Well, I mean, it was made, the point was made just before the festival started, when everybody was saying that when all the industry folks were saying that this is going to be a big year for deal making, because there's a lot of stuff out there that looks like promising, marketable films. Last year, of the 50 or so films that did get bought up at Sundance and got a release, very few of them actually made money. And this is, I mean, it's a sliding scale. I mean, you're not going to get the sort of big budget Transformers sort of box office returns for these little movies. But then you're not spending $200 million to make robots walk around Chicago either.
Right. But Sundance is not a guarantee of financial success for a director or for an actor at the box office.
No, it really is. It really goes back to the point that this is actually art, and that the motivations for making these movies are more than just being able to score a $200 million box office post or so that the celebrity can go buy his new mansion. A lot of these people are in this because they have stories to tell and because they want to act in important roles. And that they want to stretch themselves artistically, and there's more in it than just the almighty dollar.
Mm. We're speaking with Sean Means, movie critic and columnist for the Salt Lake Tribune, and he is joining us from KPCW in Park City, where he's covering the Sundance Film Festival. If you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Sean Means, describe opening night for us. There was a screening of the film The Queen of Versailles.
Right. Opening night the last couple of years has been a little different than it used to be. It used to be they would get some sort of, nice, safe, middlebrow, comedy drama to play as the opener. And then from there go on to the big competition stuff and the big sort of meat of the festival. John Cooper, when he took over as the director of the festival, decided, let's just start. We're so eager to get the festival going. Let's just start on Thursday night. And so Thursday night, they now do back-to-back screenings of competition films at both the Eccles Theater and over at the library. And they show some two U.S. films and then two world films, one at each theaters. The opening, The Queen of Versailles, that was a startling documentary because it was really... an indictment. I don't know if the people who are in the movie knew this was going to happen, but it does turn out to be rather an indictment of the 1% of overspending and overconsumption by the super rich. And it follows this one family, the Siegel family, who David Siegel is the owner and CEO of the Westgate Resorts, which is the world's largest timeshare company. They own 28 resorts around the country, including one up in Park City, up at the Canyons. And it was started off just sort of looking at that family. He's married to a woman 30 years younger than himself, who is a very likes the finer things, mm-hmm. and likes a lot of things, and so buys a lot of things. And when she started filming the movie, it was sort of the cinema verite look at how of this one sort of super rich family, and then the stock market collapsed, and so the movie pivots into watching them dealing with the fact that their timeshare empire is on the ropes a bit. Right now there is some contention about how on the ropes they are or what people have said they are, because when the festival announced their lineup and included a description of this movie, the description was so offensive to the Siegels that they actually sued both Sundance and the filmmakers, and that lawsuit is still ongoing. So
just for the description, they're embroiled in a lawsuit, and they are kind of emblematic of some of the wealth distribution issues that we're seeing with the Occupy movement and such. So it's certainly a controversial choice for the first night.
Well, I don't think they thought it would be that controversial. I mean, the lawsuit came out just a week before the festival started. And then to make things even more surreal, while Mr. Siegel is suing the festival and the filmmakers, Mrs. Siegel was on the red carpet, mm-hmm. for the opening.
But she didn't take questions. And enjoying
every minute of it.
But she didn't take questions.
She did not take questions. That was an interesting point. And also the fact that she had not seen the movie until it screened at the Eccles.
Oh, really?
So she was seeing it for the first time along with 1,400 other people. That was interesting.
Well, perhaps that's why she didn't take questions afterward.
Well, the filmmaker Lauren Greenfield said that they wanted her to sort of absorb it for a bit before she made any sort of public comment, because that would be rather harsh for anybody to watch your life being splayed out on screen and then 5 minutes later being thrust up on a stage to say, hey, what'd you think about it?
Sure. Other highlights from the first weekend of Sundance?
That one was a highlight, as was the second movie on Thursday night called Hello, I Must Be Going. This sort of romantic comedy drama with a really standout performance by Melanie Lynskey, who is a New Zealand actress who's actually somewhat well-known in America, mostly for a regular role on 2 and a Half Men. And she also has been in Up in the Air and other films. And she gives this great lead performance as a woman who, because of circumstance, divorce and low self-esteem, is forced to move back in with her parents. And it's sort of about her trying to come out of her shell and sort of get back into the world. Mm. There have been a lot. Actually, one of the things that has been really outstanding in what I've seen in the first weekend is there are a lot of outstanding performances by female actors, by actresses. Last night, there was the premiere of a movie called Smashed, which was about a couple who, a semi-functioning alcoholic couple, and what happens when the woman in the couple decides to get sober. And she's played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who is this really charming young actress. She was in Scott Pilgrim versus the World. She was the lead in The Thing remake that came out last fall. And she gives this amazing performance as a woman who's hitting rock bottom and realizing that she needs to pull out of it.
And I understand that Mary Elizabeth Winstead grew up in Salt Lake City.
She grew up. She lived in Sandy for a time, but now, of course, is based in L.A.
We're speaking with Sean Means, movie critic for the Salt Lake Tribune, who is covering Sundance in Park City. If you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number. So Smashed, gathering some buzz. So what are some of the other feature films that are getting buzz from the critics and from the crowds that are seeing these films?
Well, you know, buzz is a tricky thing because everybody tries to have buzz, say that their movie has buzz before everybody sees it. And that's publicity hype. And really, you can't, reliable buzz doesn't actually show up in Sundance until about Tuesday or Wednesday. And that's because that's when all the movies, certainly all the U.S. competition films and the world competition films, they've all had at least one screening. And so people have actually seen them and people are actually talking about them. There are a lot of movies that are getting talked about already. Beasts of the Southern Wild, which is this Southern drama that I have not seen yet, but I've heard people on the buses talking about. I've heard people talk, both good and bad about various movies. One movie that has been very divisive is called Simon Killer, which is this very explicit, both sexually and in terms of violence, drama. And that movie has torn people. Some people have loved it. Some people have hated it.
Hmm.
And there's also there's another story that another movie that got massive responses, which I've only heard about secondhand. There's a movie in the Next program, which is the Sundance's ultra low budget sidebar program, movie called Compliance, and it involves a fast food employee who's accused of stealing and she's accused of stealing, and her female manager basically locks her away in the back room and institutes a strip search, and it is this sort of dark psychological drama, and it gets into stuff about the Milgram experiments and the way what people will put up with in terms of torture or bad behavior. And at the screening for this movie, I've heard the Q&A afterwards became like this massive shouting match.
Hmm.
People yelling at the filmmaker and people yelling back at the people who are yelling at the filmmaker, and just this really intense argument right there in front of everybody about whether this movie was misogynistic or what.
I imagine that kind of provocative discussion is exactly what Robert Redford wants to happen at Sundance. Is just
what Redford and all the organizers. I mean, they, I've talked to programmers who say that when they do the programming for the festival, a movie that gets that all the programmers kind of like has a lower opportunity or lower chance of getting into the festival than a movie that a couple of the programmers really love and a couple of the programmers really hate. Mm. You know, if there's that kind of passion and tension, that movie is more likely to get into the festival than a movie that just everybody goes, that was nice. Right. And that, you know, part of the reason that they're here, part of the reason Sundance is here, is to start fights and start arguments and start conversations about what we want to see in films.
We're speaking with Sean Means, the movie critic and columnist for the Salt Lake Tribune. He is in Park City covering the Sundance Film Festival. And if you'd like to join us, if you have questions or comments about some of the film selections that are on the docket left this week, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. We need to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce. Today on the program, Utah's celebration of independent film is underway. Sundance is in full swing, and joining us with the insider's guide to Sundance is Sean Means. He's the movie critic and columnist for the Salt Lake Tribune covering Sundance in Park City. If you would like to join us, if you have questions about the films that are being screened this year, what's on your must-see list? 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. And let's go to the phones, and David is joining us from Salt Lake City. David, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Oh, good. I was just asking about a movie I heard about that was called Frank and the Robot. I think that's the name. And it has a pretty well-known actor. I think his name's Larry Lignelli or something like that.
Langella, I believe. Okay.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Okay. Are you planning to see it, David?
Well, I thought about it. Yeah, I'm going to try to go next week. I think there's one in Salt Lake at a venue that seats over 400 people. So I know they're all on waiting lists. So I'm going to try for that one because you might have a better chance of actually getting in to see it.
Okay.
Then it might be pretty popular. But I wondered what he thought about that particular show. If he's seen that movie, and if there's any other comedies that jumped out that he liked.
Okay. David, thanks for the call. Sean Means, Frank and the Robot?
Robot and Frank is
Robot
the title.
Robot and Frank, okay.
Right. And it was the opening night film in Salt Lake on Friday night at the Rose Wagner. It is playing again in Salt Lake, actually, on Sunday the 29th, the final day, at the Rose Wagner. I did not see it because it opened down there when I was up here. And it is... I have heard that's kind of nice, kind of sweet film. It stars Frank Langella as a retired pickpocket whose children decide to get him a robot caretaker. This is sort of slightly in the future. his kids decide that they get this robot caretaker who is there to sort of help him out and also to sort of keep him happy. And as it turns out, the way that the robot is programmed to keep them happy is to sort of go into whatever their interests are. So they wind up getting back into the thievery. I've only heard that it was pretty well received at the opening night.
And there is another chance to see it this week.
Right. It's playing several times in Park City and actually once in Ogden on Saturday night. And then also at the Rose Wagner.
Robot and Frank, starring Frank Langella. David, thanks very much for the call. David's other question, other comedies that you would recommend?
Well, you know, there are some actually good romantic comedies. People have been talking about this year as being the answer to Bridesmaids, that female-centric comedies were going to be a big deal this year. And there have actually been some. There's one opening or one premiering tonight called Bachelorette, which stars Kirsten Dunst and Isla Fisher and Lizzie Kaplan as women who are doing a bachelorette party for one of their former high school friends. No word yet on how good that will be. That's one that again where buzz is sort of pre-manufactured and the proof will be tonight when we actually see it. Mm. There is a really good romantic comedy called Save the Date, also starring Lizzie Kaplan, who as a young woman who breaks up with her boyfriend at the same time that her sister is in the process of arranging her wedding. And what happens when she basically finds a rebound relationship just as all this is happening with her sister.
David, thanks very much for the call. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. Again, we're speaking with Sean Means, movie critic extraordinaire for the Salt Lake Tribune. If you'd like to join us, we're talking about Sundance. You mentioned earlier that there are a lot of films with very strong women's roles, leading roles. I'm wondering if there are other themes that you are seeing popping up this year that are... in groups, prevalent year's lineup.
One thing this year, and especially, I mean, we haven't yet talked about the documentaries, which in my mind is one of the most important aspects of Sundance. They foster documentary filmmaking in ways that nobody else does, and the secret, and it's not so much a secret anymore, about Sundance is that the documentaries frequently are the best movies at the festival. They are as entertaining and as dramatic as anything that any screenwriter can come up with. And this year, there are a lot of documentaries. They've talked about how there are a lot of comprehensive documentaries, as in the one documentary you need to see about any particular topic. There's Escape Fire is this, great comprehensive documentary about the American healthcare system. I'm trying to remember some of the others here.
There's the D word, dyslexia, which is by
dyslexia, right?
Part-time Utah resident James Redford.
Yep, Mr. Redford, Robert Redford's son James did this documentary about dyslexia. There's We're Not Broke, which is about debt. There's Detropia, which is about the city of Detroit and the collapse of the industrial Midwest.
And that's being promoted, I believe, by Gerilyn Dreyfuss, prominent Utahn and executive producer of the Oscar-winning film Born into Brothels.
Right. And Gerilyn and her and the company she is involved with called Impact Partners, they invest in important socially relevant documentaries, and Detropia, I think, is one of them that they're doing this year. There's a great one called The House I Live In, which is about the war on drugs and how that's sort of gone on for the last 40 years and what's happening with it. There's a great one called, there's one that I'm looking forward to called Finding North, which is about hunger in America. And interestingly enough, the one of the producers of the film is Tom Colicchio, the head judge on Top Chef, the reality show. Mm. And the fact that he's got this standing and prominence in the food world, in the culinary world as from Top Chef and from his restaurant chain, and that he has as his, pet cause for a great many years is the issue of hunger in the United States. So there are a lot of documentaries about that are sort of the documentary you need to see about particular topics, and a lot of those topics, a lot of those documentaries, and some of the narrative films are about that whole 99% versus 1%. Argument that we're having in the country now, and the whole some of the same issues that spawned the Occupy Wall Street movement are coming out in these documentaries, and it's sort of an organic thing. I mean, by the time Occupy Wall Street was happening, most of these movies were being finished, so it was something that it's sort of like something was in the air that was happening all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
You mentioned the Occupy movement. Occupiers were supposed to be in Park City occupying there and having a film festival of their own. I'm just wondering if that's caused any disruption or what kind of visibility does the Occupy Sundance have up in Park City?
I've been in the wrong places to see any of that. I've been mostly in theaters and that sort of thing is happening out on the street where I have not been. It's hard to disrupt something that's as naturally disruptive as a film festival. And one group trying to get attention is the same as, you know, every group is trying to get attention. So it's just a matter of how loud you're shouting and where and where you happen to be shouting from. I have heard that they've been the Occupy Park City. There is an Occupy Park City group, and they've been doing some sort of guerrilla theater stuff and stuff on the streets. But they've been very, you know, they have actually been cooperative and working with, you know, have called the Sundance Institute to try to, you know, make sure that they don't, you know, mess up things too badly.
Interestingly enough, in your column on the opening night, Robert Redford kind of took that issue as his own and said, you know, independent filmmakers are the 99%.
Right. I mean, it's a thing that Sundance has to deal with all the time because, the people whose films they show, I mean, most of them are, you know, scruffy, do-it-yourself, scraping together money, you know, artists. And then you put them in the same, you know, well-off ski town with corporate sponsors and so on, and, you know, trying to reach that balance of you know, are you selling out or are you buying in, I guess is sort of the old-fashioned way to say it. You do have that sometimes, but I think that the independent filmmakers, they are definitely the 99%, and even most of the actors, even most of the celebrities and the movie stars you see out there, they may have some money, but you know they're not you know Richard Branson, they're not Steve Jobs, they're not Rupert Murdoch, they're not, you know, the people who have the real money.
Mm. You know. Sean Means, movie critic for the Salt Lake Tribune. If you'd like to join us with your thoughts about this year's Sundance Film Festival, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. You had written about that there have been a few films about LGBT issues. And one of them is by director Ira Sachs, who lives in Deer Valley and built the Yarrow Hotel.
Well,
keep the lights on.
Ira's father was the developer who originally developed the Yarrow Hotel. Ira's ties to Salt Lake and to Utah are a little more tenuous than that. He grew up in Memphis and he came up to visit quite a lot, to visit his dad up here quite a lot.
Got the wrong Ira then. Sorry.
Well, Ira Senior. It was his dad who ran the Yarrow, but the connection though is that he would come up here to visit his dad, and when he was 15. Came up to see the U.S. Film Festival, the United States Film Festival, before Sundance took it over, and Ira has become a mainstay of Sundance. He's had five films here, two shorts and three feature films. He won the Grand Jury Prize about 10 years ago with a movie called 40 Shades of Blue. And this one, Keep the Lights On, is very personal, very autobiographical. He's very open. You know, he talked in the Q&A about how when he came out to when he was 16, and he talked about how this movie is a reflection of the fact that he doesn't see his life and doesn't see the life of gays and lesbians depicted in films nearly with any sort of regularity or accuracy to what he knows his life, you know, knows of his life. So he created this very, very interesting romantic drama, very, very, very powerful romantic drama, very sexually explicit as well. But following this relationship for about a decade or more of both between this couple, where the main issue that comes between them is the fact that one of them is addicted to crack.
Mm.
So it is actually a very powerful film called Keep the Lights On.
This email from A.E. Barr, who writes, "The best I've seen at Sundance is Searching for Sugar Man." Have you seen that, Sean Means?
I did not, but my colleague David Berger did.
What's it
about? And it is about a guy named I have to look it up here, but he's known as the Bob Dylan of Mexico, and he was I didn't check. There it is here. His name is Rodriguez, just one word, Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. And he was a 70s rock star who basically disappeared, sort of, you know, fell off the map. And as the title implies, Searching for Sugar Man, the movie is about trying to find out whatever happened to this guy. And the story takes some very interesting turns. For one thing, it turns out that unbeknownst to anybody, after his star faded in the 70s and through the United States and Mexico and so on, his music became very popular in South Africa. And nobody's for reasons that are a little strange. And so the movie is about, you know, the search for this guy, and I don't want to. My colleague David Berger was very adamant about we don't want to give away anything else in the movie.
We will leave it right there then. So that recommendation, Searching for Sugar Man, for the Sundance novice. You're very experienced at this festival. What kind of tips would you give to people who have never gone on getting tickets, on where to park, kind of those logistical bits of information?
Right. Well, I mean, the old joke about there's no place to park in Park City, and that's not entirely true. There are pay lots you can hit if you get here early enough in the day. My best advice is basically play hooky for a day. Take a day and midweek, like Tuesday, Wednesday, is a really good time to do it because the celebrity thing has sort of died down a little bit. It's a little calmer. Get up here on a Tuesday or a Wednesday. Take the day. Try to get into as many movies as you can. Do the waitlist thing where you get there a couple hours before the showtime. Get in line. You get a queue number. If you get there early enough, you can usually get into whatever you're trying to get into. The other thing is that go see movies that look fine. If you have a choice between a weird movie and a movie with celebrities, go for the weird movie because mm-hmm. the movie with celebrities in it will show up again somewhere else. Go for the stuff that is never going to come this way again. And just open yourself up to experiment with it, basically. And the other things to look out for, go to the short films. The short film programs are wonderful. You've got these up-and-coming filmmakers. Frequently, you go to the shorts program, and you come out into the lobby, and you'll see these nervous-looking people who haven't shaved, and that's the filmmaker. If you go say hi to the filmmaker and say, "I liked your movie," you will have made a friend for life. They'll come home and do your laundry. You know, they're going to be so grateful that anybody saw what they did and liked what they did. They'll just love you forever.
We're actually having conversations on this program later this week with three Utah short filmmakers who don't get a lot of the limelight. So we thought we'd put some spotlight on them. Venues in Park City, you say, but there's still some great offerings here in Salt Lake City and Ogden. You don't have to drive up the mountain if you don't want to.
Right. And the Salt Lake screenings are very the filmmakers actually that I've talked to in the past, they love the Salt Lake screenings because it's a real audience. You know, up in Park City, half of the audience is from L.A. or New York. They're industry people. They're the same people they see when they're, you know, back home in Los Angeles. Seeing a movie in a Salt Lake screening, they get a real audience. They get real people. And because of Sundance over the years, Salt Lake City has actually one of the most sophisticated and most intelligent indie film audiences in the country. I mean, Sundance has trained us really well, frequently the questions and the Q&As are better at the Salt Lake screenings than at the Park City screenings. People really get involved and really get into it, and the filmmakers love that because it's like a test. It's like having a test screening. It's like this is how it's going to play in front of real people, and so. You know, if you can't get up to Park City, which is fun for all the people watching and all the, you know, craziness of it, get a taste of it in Salt Lake, and you'll still get a great experience out of it.
Final question: predictions. Do you have any thoughts on who might be taking away the grand prizes at the end of the week?
You know, I have learned over the years that you can never tell. The way the juries go and the way the audiences go and the way critics go, you can really never tell what's going to be good. I do have to say though, I got to mention one movie, best movie I've seen at the festival so far, and I saw it last night. It's called Safety Not Guaranteed. It is about a magazine intern and a magazine reporter who go to a town in Washington State because of a classified ad that says, looking for a partner in time travel, must bring own weapons, safety not guaranteed. And so they want to check this guy out to see if he's like a flake or whatever. And the intern is played by Aubrey Plaza, who is a comedian who is on the show Parks and Rec. Very funny young woman.
April, I believe.
Yeah, she plays April on Parks and Rec, right? And she meets this, she meets the guy who's played by Mark Duplass, who is a indie filmmaker and director and actor. And it follows what happens between these two people, and whether or not this guy is nuts or whether he is nuts and for real. And it's just an amazing movie.
Sean Means, movie critic and columnist for the Salt Lake Tribune, joining us from KPCW in Park City. And Sean, thanks very much and happy viewing.
Thank you very much.
Up next, we turn our attention to the other festival in Park City, Slam Dance. But first a break. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce, and this is City Views. When a group of filmmakers gets rejected from the Sundance Film Festival, they decide to create their own event. A promising plot line? You bet. And Slam Dance has become a full-bodied film festival in its own right. Joining me now to talk about Slam Dance is one of the founders and the current director of the festival, Peter Baxter. He's a filmmaker and one of three founders of the self-described subversive film festival, Slam Dance. Since 1995, Slam Dance has become a year-round film festival. It includes the film festival, screenplay, and teleplay competitions and Slam Dance studios. And Peter Baxter joins us from the studios of KPCW in Park City. Peter Baxter, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you. Good morning.
So, listeners, do you Slam Dance? What Slam Dance films are you looking forward to seeing this year? 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Peter Baxter, as I mentioned earlier this hour, the Sundance Film Festival is dedicated to promoting and supporting independent film. How is Slam Dance similar or different?
Well, I think at Slam Dance, what we've established over the years is a showcase of emerging filmmaking talent. And I think in many ways, it's a true representation of independent film. After all of the films in competition this year have come to the festival with very low budgets. They don't have very big star names in it, but it's the promise of this new talent which is coming through, which will be the stars of tomorrow. Christopher Nolan had a following at Slam Dance a few years ago. Oren Peli's film Paranormal Activity was sold at Slam Dance and has gone on to create this massive movie-making franchise. But really what we're seeing at Slam Dance is filmmakers really coming out of nowhere with their independent films. These are films that should be made, as I said, for very small amounts of money. And I think what's great about this year's program is that we're seeing this very strong program, which is utilizing incredibly well new technology, which is helping to create productions of very high standard, which has allowed the filmmakers to craft really compelling and excellent stories. And I think this is a great year for Slam Dance. I think in many ways it's sort of promising a kind of a new era of a new wave of independent film.
Hmm. This is reportedly your biggest festival in the 17 years since you founded Slam Dance. Talk about opening weekend. What were some of the highlights for you?
Well, we had a very, very popular opening weekend, and the films in both documentary and the narrative competition were very well received. We had a fantastic event yesterday with Neil Young and Jonathan Demme. They've made a film called Journeys, and we wanted to make sure that with them coming to the festival, they will also really integrate themselves into the new filmmakers that we're showing. And so we had a coffee event with them yesterday. And it really was incredible because what we found out through their discussion was that just in the ways that our filmmakers have struggled to make their films, they have also struggled as well. And it really provided for not only just great entertainment, but it was very inspirational and educational about how these masters of storytelling, whether it's with their music or their filmmaking, have really done things in their own way. And you know, still do today. And it was just really incredible for our filmmakers to be a part of that and hear that.
Mm. We're speaking with Peter Baxter, a filmmaker in his own right, as well as the one of the founders and the current director of Slam Dance Film Festival. If you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Some feature films in Slam Dance this year to watch. One that's getting a bit of press that caught my eye, Bindlestiffs. Talk about these young filmmakers and what drew you to this particular film.
Well, Bindlestiffs, I think, is an example of that film I was just speaking about a few minutes ago. Here we have a group of young filmmakers. In fact, when they made Bindlestiffs, they were in high school.
And so very young,
and they have crafted, you know, using new technology, this amazing story, which is like a sort of an update, a variation of The Catcher in the Rye, and they have, it's a collaboration. Of course, that's what independent film is, filmmaking is all about, and they're here in Park City, and they're very enthusiastic. And so so has been the audience that has seen the first screening of this film. And again, it's the excitement of these young filmmakers coming through, which the audiences are responding to. And I think that I think this film actually could sell here at Slam Dance. It's been very popular so far.
In the documentary category, one of the posters that I saw around Park City quite a bit, We Are Legion, The Story of the Hacktivists by director-screenwriter Brian Knappenberger. This is the story of Anonymous, right?
Yes, this is, and it's a comprehensive look at the movement. It's been in the making here for the last year, and it really gives us a great sense of the different sides of the Anonymous movement. And of course, that's a very popular film at Slam Dance. It's all about freedom. And that played to a packed house. And of course, it's playing again this coming week as well. And, you know, I should say that a lot of the films at Slam Dance, in fact, most, it seems now, officially sold out. But what we've been finding is that in rush lines, there's a very good chance that anyone that hasn't got a ticket to our screenings for this week will get in. And we welcome, you know, everyone at Slam Dance, and we'll try our very best to get them in. So, but this has been a very popular film at Slam Dance, too.
Speaking with Peter Baker, who is the director of Slam Dance, he's also a filmmaker in his own right. And Peter, you've got a documentary in competition this year, Wild in the Streets. What is this about?
Well, thank you. Yes, it's a special screening, actually, which is out of competition. But I have been making a film for the last 5 years. It's a documentary about the origins of our football game. And it really is the mother of all of our football games played around the world, whether it's rugby, American football, or soccer. And in this small market town right in the middle of England, a place called Ashbourne, they play a game there called Shrovetide football. And this is a game that was once played throughout the British Isles, but through the centuries it was stopped for various reasons. Kings, wars, revolutions eventually stopped it being played around the British Isles. But in Ashbourne, the whole town is the playing field. The whole town plays this game. If you're on one side of the river, you play on one side. If you're on the other, you play on the other team. And it's played over 2 days. It's played in darkness. It starts at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and goes on until 10 o'clock at night. And what we find out in this documentary, actually, though it is about this football game, this longest team sports rivalry on the face of the earth, in the end, actually, it's about the people that keep this game going against all the odds. I mean, you can imagine, with all the rules and regulations that we're facing these days, how difficult it is to, you know, allow a game like this to be played through the streets of Ashbourne in the countryside without any rules. But you know what we get from this is really a you know, we see in the people of Ashbourne that they found something which is the meaning to their life. It's very, very important, and as I said, it really is the mother of all of our ball games.
It is a remarkable film to watch, and as I was watching it, I thought, how in the world did you film this? Because really, it's like a mass riot. It's like the running of the bulls. You know, just massive crush of people in this tiny little 3-mile run between these two goals. How many cameras did you have to have logistically? How'd you do it?
Well, we started off actually by filming the main game, and we had 6 cameras. And again, new technology came into the forefront of it, helping us make this documentary. And what we very simply did, and it was care of the production manager's great idea, is we just gridded the whole town. And through walkie-talkies and texts and cell phone, we were able then to tell the cinematographers where the ball was going next. So we wanted to make sure that we caught the game. It was a challenge to capture the game because you're dealing with a 3-mile, 3-mile area here. You know, the goals are 3 miles apart. It starts in the middle of the town. And we're looking at 3,000 people here that are pushing, running, struggling to get this ball to their goal. So it was a challenge, but that's how we organized, and it worked pretty well. But we were very concerned that we might miss a goal, and but we didn't. We were able to capture it all, and of course we just had these great cinematographers that were able to that joined in the spirit of this independent film, and were able to be with us for that game.
I want to play just a short clip and then have you respond. This is one of the people that we meet in the film who worries that this tradition of, Shrovetide?
Yeah, Shrovetide football
will eventually peter out because of new development. I'll play the clip and then get your response.
Do you realise that if we held a referendum in Ashbourne at the present time, whether Shrovetide should continue or not, we would lose it? Because there's that many outsiders now that have moved in, that are living on the outskirts in these new houses that have gone up. They know nothing about the game. They don't try and get to know anything about it. And as soon as it starts to play, the first thing they say is, oh, it's that bloody game again.
That's from the film of Peter Baker's Wild in the Streets. Peter Baker, did you anticipate that there would be an end to Shrovetide football because of encroaching development on a town?
Well, when we first arrived there, we went there to find out whether we could actually make a documentary about this, and we really needed the whole town to be a part of that filmmaking. I mean, you know, we in the end had focused on a few characters, but we really needed both sides and the entire game and the entire town to be a part of the filmmaking. And we soon found out that there was a game that this was loved by the people of Ashbourne, but it really wasn't loved by England. We found that outstanding, that here was a game that was so important. It led to all of the games that are so popular around the world. I mean, if it wasn't for this game, we wouldn't have been able to watch, the game yesterday on television. I mean, this is really the root of where it all came from. And now what they're facing as they keep their game alive, and that all the rules and regulations that are around us are really trying to thwart this game, and really that's their biggest battle now. That's their biggest foe, is to keep this game going. I'm going to say, if it wasn't for the people and their passion, it wouldn't exist. And it's important for us really, because they remind us not only of how sport really really should be played, but the value of life is something that we really want, and the determination to keep it going, and really therefore how important a community is. And I think that the people that we've shown the film to so far have responded very well to that, and they see a power really of what a community can do to keep something going which they love.
Peter Baxter. He is the director of the documentary Wild in the Streets. He's also one of the founders and the current director of the Slam Dance Film Festival, now happening in Park City. We've only got about 30 seconds left, Peter Baxter, but is the goal to get these films distributed, or is this really art for art's sake?
Well, I think what you have at Slam Dance are films which, you know, completely 100% independently made. And I think audiences these days are beginning to appreciate more and more that films don't have to be driven by stars, and these films can do really well in the box office. And and we're seeing that more and more at Slam Dance, that films are being picked up and finding distribution. And I think this year at Slam Dance is a very special year for the standard of films that we have. And I think distributors are going to respond. But more importantly to say is that audiences, I think, are having a bigger say now at what gets distributed, whether it's at the theater or now in a big growth spurt that we're seeing through online, through VOD. Electronic sell-through with the platforms that we're now working with, like Xbox and Zune.
Peter Baxter, the director of the Slam Dance Film Festival happening this week in Park City, joining us from KPCW in Park City. And Peter, thanks very much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you very much. Onward and upward.
City Views is a production of KCPW News in Salt Lake City. Our technical director is Jesse Ellis, and thanks to Tamara Kemsley. Next time, Utah's growing affection for tattoos. Join us for that discussion tomorrow. For City Views, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce.